You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Kings. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday. You're listening to Locked On Los Angeles Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, bringing you all sorts of news about the Los Angeles Kings, your hopefully favorite hockey team, here on your favorite podcast app of choice. Today's show is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. You can download the app and use it to talk to sports fans just like you across the world. Go check out Spotify Green Room. It's changing the way we talk sports. Talking sports today about the Kings, my name is Sarah Avampato, host of this show. Always glad to be here with you as we look at the moves that the Kings made. As we talked about in our last show, the Kings actually did something in free agency. The Kings lately, especially, have never been a particularly big user of free agency. Most of the signings that they've made have been depth deals. They haven't really made a big splash, you know, understandably so, because a lot of their free agency deals have been mediocre at best. So I feel like at least speaking for myself, I didn't really know what to expect from Rob Blake going into this free agency. Didn't know if he was actually going to go for anything or if we were just going to see more of the same sort of depth moves that we've seen over the past handful of years. But Rob Blake went for it, and he signed center Phil Deneau from the Montreal Canadiens, was a free agent, signed him for 6 years. So we now have just an abundance of depth at center. And much like people say you can never have too much depth in your goalie position, because we all know what happens, both of your goalies are inevitably going to be hurt at the same time, and that usually never ends well. You can never have too much depth at the center position too, because it is something that is just absolutely crucial to a team's success. I think you look back at any Stanley Cup winning team over the past however many years, and you're always going to find a good center behind that. I mean, look no further than the Kings teams that won in 2012 and 2014. The center depth there was just absolutely bonkers. And that's something that the Kings haven't really had since those Cup teams kind of started to get broken up and separated. So we're working on that. We're working on rebuilding that. We have a ton of center depth in the system, but a lot of them aren't quite ready yet. They haven't really proven yet that they can step up and take over NHL duties every day really have the trust of the coach and the team in all situations. So we went out and got ourselves a very strong defensive forward in Philippe Deneau from the Montreal Canadiens. Well, previously from Montreal, now a free agent. The Kings also made a couple of other signings too. As I mentioned, they signed Alex Edler from who was previously part of the Vancouver Canucks, and then a couple of depth signings for their AHL team. So we're going to be taking a look at those signings. So today we're hearing all about Philippe Deneau. On Monday, you're going to hear a little bit about Alex Edler and what he can bring in as he sort of winds down his career. And then next week, we're going to move a little bit backwards in time. We're going to look at Brandt Clark from the Barrie Colts, the Kings' first round draft pick this year. We're going to dig a little bit more into him, into what things are going to look like for him next season, and a little bit more. So that is sort of the schedule for the near future. Now we're going to learn all about Phil Deneau. So as I said earlier in the week, we're going straight to the experts to learn a little bit more about the Kings' big free agent splash, which is center Phil Deneau, who is ours for the foreseeable future for the next 6 years, locked him up with a contract. Rob Blake made a big move to actually bring in a real NHL player this year in free agency, which is not something that they've done very often in the past. So today I have Laura Saba here with me from Locked On Canadiens, who has had the pleasure of watching Phil Deneau play over the past few seasons with them. And so we're going to learn a little bit more about the defensive forward from Laura. So first off, I'll peel back the curtain a little bit and say that I got a very excited message from you as soon as that announcement was made about Phil coming to the Kings. And I was also very excited. We have talked about him a lot on the national show when you've been a guest on Locked On NHL. So it just felt like good karma. It felt like the universe was finally giving me something nice. And after all of the suffering with this team, it did. So I'm familiar with young Phil Deneau from when he was with the Chicago Blackhawks and the Rockford IceHogs, but he has definitely grown and matured into an even better player than when I last kept close tabs on him. So what can you tell all of us about Phil and how he is going to fit in on this team and what role he played with the Canadiens?
So I'm actually quite curious as to what your thoughts are as to how he's going to fit in Los Angeles, because you've already got a Selke center, and there are two more waiting in the wings, right? There are two more in the pipeline. Steve Deneau is as two-way as it gets. I would say he's more defensive than offensive, actually. He's a player that was much loved in Montreal and did a really good job here, and I quite frankly am very sorry to see him go. I think it's going to be difficult for the Canadiens to replace him, and I think that what if I want to address LA Kings fans, you're really going to like watching him play against Vegas is what I'm going to say. He's very, very good at sacrificing his offensive game in totality and focusing on the defensive side, which if you look at it on paper, often it looks like he does not produce. And that's really not what's going on there. It's that, as he has matured as a person and a player, he has kind of learned to do that, is sacrificing points for what the team needs and putting the team ahead of him. And I would say that's mostly on ice, though. I think he got along really well with his line mates and his team, and he loved the group. As for the organization, I truly, truly am not sure why the talks ended where they did. And speaking to people who are kind of more familiar and connected with the how this worked, it seemed that he had one foot out the door already the last time they negotiated, which was in September after the bubble and after that season was over. And it seemed like at that point something must have happened, and it might be that the Canadiens didn't really give him the assurance that he needed or the value that he thought he deserved. And at that point, it was time for him to go. I understand. I wish him the best. I will miss him in Montreal. And I'm sad that Montreal let him go without having an adequate replacement just yet.
We've got more about Phil Deneau, what he can offer to the Kings, and where he's going to fit in the lineup coming up right after this.
Yeah, that was actually going to be a question that I had from, you know, looking at it from the Canadians' perspective of what does this mean for them? Like Deneau to me has always kind of seemed like your perfect like 2 or 3C, because he doesn't necessarily have the offense, but he's the guy you throw out there against, like you mentioned, Vegas. You put him out there against Mark Stone, who we'll talk about later, and he just shuts down your opposing teams, and you kind of get that 1-2 punch of whoever your 1C is. In this case for the Kings, it'll be Kopitar. You know, it seems like he had to play maybe a little above where he should have been with the Canadiens, because there just wasn't anyone else to do it. So like, where does this leave them? What have they done? do they have any centers, I guess, first off?
Well, they do, but they're waiting in the wings. And so if you've been paying attention to what the Canadians have been doing this offseason, for mostly it would probably be for negative reasons because of their first overall, their first round draft pick, I should say. Mm-hmm. And it would be fair to have negative attention on them. But if you look at their signings, they have been depth replacements, and they haven't really made a splash in free agency. They haven't made a splash via trade. And it's because their core is still a couple of years away from contending. That playoff run, while magical, was unexpected, and it was further than anyone thought they would go for good reason. And I think that the Canadians themselves right now, if they're aiming to make the playoffs, I think that's the highest they can hope for. And in the division that they're in, it's going to be really tough to begin with. You know, things have to go, everything has to go right for Montreal, and things have to go wrong for at least one team that's ahead of them in this division. And so I think that where it leaves Montreal right now is a team that can go back to the business of rebuilding and preparing their young players, because they have Nick Suzuki, who is still obviously developing. He's a fantastic playmaker. He's got beautiful vision. He is as we've talked about many, many times, he's one of my favorite players on this team. I love watching him play. You've got Cole Caulfield, who hasn't even entered his rookie year, and he went to the Stanley Cup final last season. So, you know, it is a team that unexpectedly made the final, and the contending window isn't expected to open until 2 to 3 years from now. And at the same time, the big question mark is Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who is still 21. Every time you see any kind of coverage or any opinion on Jesperi Kotkaniemi, the words "he is 21 years old" come up. It's because he's entering now his fourth season in the NHL. And he has been inconsistent like any young player. And it's not entirely his fault. He's been played with every single person on his line from this Montreal Canadiens team. And, you know, that's a tough position to be in. And so you've seen him blossom in certain situations, like in the bubble and during some parts of the playoffs. And he's definitely a player with promise. And he's the one that they're expecting. I think what the Canadians are expecting is Nick Suzuki would be the first line center. Mm-hmm. And then Kotkaniemi would be the second line center. And they need an adequate, competent Philippe Danault type player. And I think Philippe Danault was always in, if the team was good, if the team had been good during Philippe Danault's tenure here, he would always have been the third line center, not the first line center. Mm-hmm. That would have been his job. And he would have done a really great job. So what we're hoping in Montreal is that they are able to fill that hole through trade, because there aren't very many free agents left. But if not, they're going to have to push somebody like Jake Evans to really pick up where Deno left off. And that is really the defensive game. Like, Jake Evans is not going to be the guy that's dishing out to Brendan Gallagher, and Brendan Gallagher is going to score a bunch of goals off of him. That's not going to happen. But the defensive part of his game can be covered by Jake Evans. I think Jake Evans is the kind of guy where I would say that the Canadians drafted and developed correctly. And so I'm hoping that if they have aspirations to make the playoffs, they're going to need to bring in a guy. If they just are going to, you know, wing it and keep developing these young guys, then they don't. I think then it would make more sense to give Ryan Poehling the opportunity to crack the lineup and show what he's got.
I forgot all about the fact that Ryan Poehling existed.
So did Montreal at some point. Well, he was injured for a good chunk of this season, but he also had his spots stolen by Nick Suzuki, and not maliciously in any way. You know, Suzuki showed up and was like, "I'm going to make the team this year," and he did. And you can't argue that wasn't good, you know. And even Nick Suzuki, he's far more consistent than Jesperi Kotkaniemi, but he's also struggling with inconsistency at times, because he's also still a fairly young player. And so, like I said, if they think that they're going to make the playoffs, then they're going to have to spend something and get a center. But personally, I would find it more prudent to continue on the track that they're on and to develop the guys that they already have in the system. And you've got to remember that they've got like Tyler Toffoli, they've got Josh Anderson. These guys signed here to score goals. They need somebody to dish it out. So there's a little bit of a question mark right now as to what's actually going to happen. But I don't think that the Canadians really truly have aspirations beyond hopefully making the playoffs this year. And I also think that this is, you know, the writing's kind of on the wall. This being Marc Bergevin's tenure is coming to an end. He said he was going to honor the last year that he had on his contract. And he's already got Scott Mellenby, who is dealing with a lot of things like hiring the AHL coach and all of that. So it seems pretty certain that the direction is changing. And after draft weekend, I believe that there's going to be a changing of the guard next offseason. I don't think that there's any point in firing Marc Bergevin if you're not going to fire him after the first round of the draft. I think you're just going to keep him. You know, like, that should have happened already.
Right.
And it didn't. And it doesn't seem like, from the organization's words, that's going to happen. So I think that this is very much going to be a transition year for the Canadians. I have no idea what to expect.
Well, first, I feel like the reaction from Kings fans was pretty, I don't know, 70-30 of people looking at the signing and going like, yes, this is awesome. We love this. We love the direction this is going in. Finally, Rob Blake has gone and brought in an actual competent NHL player. And then like the other 30% are people, I legit had one fire Rob Blake response in my tweets, because that's how hockey Twitter is.
We'll look at what the Kings need to do to make sure that Phil Deneau is set up for success in his new role with the team. That's coming up right after this Before we get to that, though, I want to tell you all about Built Bar, because if you haven't heard, if this is your first time here, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we can talk about Built Bar, which is the best tasting protein bar that's out there on the market. It tastes like you're not eating a protein bar. It tastes like you're eating a candy bar, which, if you ask me, is basically the most delicious thing that you could possibly be eating out there. Built Bars come in a ton of amazing different flavors, including coconut, double chocolate, German chocolate. There's a lot of chocolate flavors, which I'm super into. You can also find special limited edition Built Bars. So if you are craving something that is unique and hard to get, well, guess what? Built Bar is here for you right now. If you go to built.com, you can actually see one of those limited edition flavors, the Grasshopper Cookie Built Bar, which basically tastes like a thin mint cookie, only in protein bar form. You can go check it out for a limited time on built.com. So go get yourself a tasty, healthy treat by going to built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15. Get 15% off your order. That is promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. And if my word isn't enough for you, well, trust the word of the U.S. track and field team, because Built Bar is the official protein bar of those fantastic Olympians. So that is built.com, promo code LOCKED15.
And I think there's a lot of people who just don't really understand what he's going to bring or how he's going to fit in. So if you had to like set him up with the ideal types of teammates for his line mates, or the ideal kind of situation that he would be best successful in, that's not grammatically correct, but you know what I mean. what is sort of the ideal best case scenario for how you set him up for success on a team?
Well, first of all, you give him some PK minutes. I think that's a really good way to instantly see what he's worth. Like you said, right now it looks like he's probably going to play second line behind Andre Kopitar, right? And then you've got your younger guys who are going to be like knocking on the door. And that's also an exciting prospect. So if you're going to play him in your second line role, you're going to need at least one guy who goes to the net and one guy who is creative, because Philippe Danault is a lot of things, but he's not creative. He's solid. He's reliable. He makes few mistakes. He's fairly disciplined as well. And he will, like, he's a center, right? Part of his job is dishing, but you need a playmaker on that line, because that's not really what he brings. He's brilliant in what he does bring, but there's got to be at least one guy who's going to drive to the net, because he doesn't like his, what he does is he wraps himself around the top line of the opponent, right? He's not the guy who's going to get in the defenseman's face. Like in Montreal, that was obviously Brendan Gallagher. So you need a guy, not necessarily a pest, but who's going to drive forward. And you need a guy who's going to make the creative play. So like all of that together, I think works really well. That's why he had so much success with Brendan Gallagher and Thomas Tatar. And, it, you know, people forget that line, if you look at expected goals, that line all the way through until I think it was 2/3 of the season. And you know, the Canadians had an abysmal regular season. they were at the top of the top. When I say top, I don't mean number one. I think it was like they were behind like the Washington Capitals line with Ovechkin on it in terms of expected goals. Like they're that good together. So you really need players who are going to complement him. And that's, you know, when the more that I think about it, the more that I wonder what's going to happen without Philippe Danault. Like how many of these lines are going to have numbers like that?
Well, we talked earlier about Vegas, which is every Kings fan's least favorite thing to talk about. But I do think that, you know, if I put my Rob Blake general manager of the Kings hat on, I look at what Danault did against Vegas in their series. And I think to myself, if the Kings want to make it in the playoffs, if they want to get anywhere eventually, they're going to have to go through Vegas. Like that, you know, Vegas is not, as much as we would like it, is not going to implode overnight and become suddenly a really bad team. Like they somehow money is fake to Vegas and the cap is not real. And somehow they just have a team of like really, really good guys every year. So the road.
And they're re-signing the good ones too. That's the part that's annoying.
They just re-signed Alec Martinez. Like, no, free him. Give him, like, you don't even have to give him back. Just give him to like someone else. Like, I hate this. But so like, we're going to have to go through them. If we want to get out of the first round or whatever, we have to go through Vegas. And as much as I enjoy the youth movement with the Kings and seeing some of these young guys come up and earn spots on the team, really the only person, especially since they first moved Jeff Carter to wing and then traded him, like the only real center on the team is kind of Anze Kopitar. Like the rest of them are, either aren't ready yet. Like Quentin Byfield is going to be a beast, but he isn't ready yet to like take on that mantle and all that pressure. We don't really have anyone who can be the number two at this point. So I feel like they looked at Deneau, they looked at what he did against Vegas and Mark Stone and said, we need this guy. So for people who tuned out from watching the playoffs this season, or who just didn't watch that series because they were like, I do not want to watch Vegas do anything. Tell us how that went. Tell us how that went for Deneau in his matchups against the Vegas Golden Knights. Because if you can refresh my memory, I think they lost that series, right?
Yes, they did. That was the most competitive series that the Canadians played, to be honest. Because with Winnipeg, they railroaded Winnipeg. With Toronto, there was a lot of tension, and the Canadians didn't play all that well until they turned things around. And then obviously we saw what happened with Tampa Bay. But with Vegas, you know, Vegas is a formidable opponent. They're not, I thought that they were probably top three in the league. And I think that they were last season. I don't know what it's going to look like this season with all the changes that a lot of teams have made in the offseason. But they definitely were what I would call a formidable opponent. And so the fact that you look at most of the points that Vegas scored in that series and they came from defensemen, that should tell you something, because it's not like, you know, Max Pacioretty or Mark Stone are scrubs, right? That's not what's going on there. They've got decent players up and down the lineup. And Jesse Granger of The Athletic says that, you know, if you're in Vegas, they have no room for players who aren't 200-foot players. And so that's been a secret of their success. And so if you want to beat a 200-foot player, what do you do is you have to have one. And I think, you know, with somebody like Anze Kopitar and then Philippe Deneau coming at you, you're going to contain that Vegas top line. And then the rest of the guys, while they're good and while they can play really well on the ice, all over the ice in whatever position, they're not offensively gifted. And so you can afford to have, you know, either one of those guys go up against Vegas's top line, and then the second line can already, or the other way around, if you're playing the Deneau line, let's say, against the top line in Vegas, or the other way around, the other line is going to be able to exploit that. And I think that that's something that LA Kings fans can get really excited about.
It's been a long time since the Kings have made any sort of free agent signing that has actually made an impact. I feel like the biggest one before this was like Ilya Kovalchuk, and we all know how that ended, and it ended with him on the Montreal Canadiens. I feel like, you know, fans are always wanting the team to swing for the fences and to make a big move, and this is one that, you know, I actually see is actually going to improve the team and is going to really set them up well in the future. And I know Deneau, even in his own introductory conference, even kind of said like, listen, I don't care if it's second line, third line, whatever, like I just want to be here. And this team wants me to be here. And of course he had his anecdote about Luc Robitaille speaking to him in French. And so of course, like now they're best friends, you know, whatever. I think it's a really great move. And I have enjoyed seeing him kind of grow with Montreal. And yeah, that Vegas series where he just basically took Mark Stone's hopes and dreams and just sort of crushed them made me really happy. So if I can see him do that against Mark Stone in any of the games they have to play, I'm going to be really excited.
And I'm just picturing Mark Stone's face. Like he makes the best faces, doesn't he, when he gets stoned on a goal or frustrated or whatever. So I'm very excited for Mark Stone face all of next season.
Just real mad all the time. I love it. I want to close by asking about another one of our boys who you've been taking care of. And that's Tyler Toffoli. How's he doing? How's his dog? What's he up to? Just are you taking care of him? What's his life like now?
It's interesting, actually, that right now they're actually back in Los Angeles. He and his wife, Kat, are back in, I believe they reside in Manhattan Beach, if I'm not mistaken. And they were very, very well embraced by the Canadians fans and the media as well. I think Tyler Toffoli is a player that's been around long enough to know how to handle being in the spotlight and also just an all-around great guy. I mean, to a man, at the end of season press conference, the media thanked him so much for being so helpful and accommodating. And yes, they said thank you to all the guys, but there were some that you could really tell that they really got a lot of thoughtful responses from. And I think the thing with Tyler Toffoli now is that he's found a spot with Nick Suzuki, and so has Cole Caulfield. And so I think that line is actually going to be really, really exciting to watch in Montreal. I really hope that, you know, with Deno missing now, they're able to at least keep some pucks out of the net at some point. I think that they will, they might not replace the expected goals that the Deno line has in the last two years, maybe 2.5 years. But I think that he is much loved. And I think in the Tampa series, he said that he wasn't producing, and the coach said that he had a groin injury, and he said he didn't want to use it as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Like he should have still produced. And you know how that is with hockey fans. They were all over it. He's a hero and all of that. I don't think you should play injured personally, but I've never been in a Stanley Cup final. And just people love him, and people, they love his wife as well, or social media, because she seems to have embraced Montreal as well. I am a little sad that the team from that cup run has been broken up. And there were a lot of changes in the last offseason. There's going to be a lot of changes in this offseason. And I hope that Tyler Toffoli can still continue to score all those goals, because otherwise who else is going to other than him and Cole Caulfield? No, we love him. We love him.
I love it. Well, for Kings fans, I think hearing about Toffoli playing with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, I think will give Kings fans some big, weird flashbacks to when Toffoli first came into the NHL and he played on a line with Tanner Pearson and Jeff Carter. And Jeff Carter was the elder statesman of that league with these two kids next to him. And I feel like it is a very weird idea to think of Tyler Toffoli as the elder statesman of a line, shepherding these two young, you know, very young in their career NHL players to a playoff run and success and everything. It's very bizarre to think about, because in my mind, he's still just this like 22-year-old kid, like out of juniors and
winning a Stanley Cup.
And here we are. Here we are. And now he's like the grown up. It feels
he's very the dad. It's going to be really fun to watch the dynamic, actually, because I do think that he's got a lot of, it's exactly like you said, he's like the elder statesman on there, but he's also a kind of guy who appreciates teammates, who sees his role as somebody who, you know, he's going to be part of the team, and you know, his way of being a team player, I think, is going to include this year, like really mentoring and shepherding his line mates, because, you know, it's not just those two guys that are young on the team. You've also got Kotkaniemi, who's pretty young. You've got Alexander Romanov, who's pretty young. We're expecting at least one defenseman to come in through the players that they've drafted. So there's going to be a lot of young guys on the team. And I think that he's definitely a steadying, mature, experienced, kind and positive presence, which I really think that the locker room is going to need without Shea Weber and with Mike Hoffman, who I've got a lot of questions about being introduced into the lineup. I really think that Tyler Toffoli is going to need to be there to balance out.
Well, I wish him all the best, and we'll continue to keep an eye on all of our Kings boys who have left, gone new places. And we're very glad to welcome Phil Deneau here to Los Angeles. And he has a very good dog, so he's going to fit right in with the Kings and their penchant for picking up players with good dogs. So, you know, that's also a plus too. So
yes.
Thank you so much for jumping on the show and telling me all about our newest center. For anyone who wants to follow the journeys of Tyler Toffoli, where can they find you and your show online?
So we are at Locked On Canadians. You can find us wherever you get Locked On LA Kings. It's myself and my co-host Scott Matla. And we're excited. If you ever want to know how Tyler Toffoli is doing, we talk about him quite a bit. So thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you for being on the show, and take good care of our boy.
Thanks so much to Laura for joining the show today to introduce you all to someone who I think is going to become a pretty quick fan favorite here in Los Angeles. That is it for today's show. Make sure you tune back in next week as we're talking Alex Edler, we're talking Brant Clark, we're talking anything else that comes to mind. So make sure you're following this show on Twitter at LockedOnLAKings so you never miss an episode or an updated piece of Kings news. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at RightSaidSarah so you can find out what's going on, I guess, in the whole wide world of hockey, because I tweet about all sorts of things. And of course, if you are new to this podcast, if you aren't already doing it, make sure you hit that big subscribe button so you never miss another episode of this show and you get to hear us in your favorite podcast app of choice. If you are a regular listener, or if you have just come here for the first time and you're enjoying yourself, make sure you leave a rating or a review on iTunes or whatever your podcast app is so the people can find us and that they can find us and know that we're great. So go leave a review. I think that's always awesome to hear from listeners like you. That is it for today. Come back next week for more Kings content here on Locked On Los Angeles Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.